Radical Space Confident Conversations, hosted by Kate Nash, OBE, with guest Damien Riley, CEO of Capita Army Recruiting. Radical Space Confident Conversations, hosted by Kate Nash, OBE, with guest Damien Riley, CEO of Capita Army Recruiting.
Damien Riley's impressive career path demonstrates his commitment to leadership across the public and private sectors. And it demonstrates duty and compassion. I have heard him speak many times and have had the great pleasure of getting to know him for a while. But you have to absorb the entirety of his background to get a measure of the man. In September 2021, he secured the role of Chief Executive of the Army Recruiting Group and is responsible for recruiting up to 12,000 regular and reserve soldiers and officers each year to serve in the British Army. It is an uncomfortable truth that in the UK, like many nations, we need to be war ready. And that is what he helps to do. He ensures that we attract, train and retain the talent that potentially could be called on to protect our nation and all of us as people. Aside from that huge responsibility, like every other person who wants to preserve and protect their financial independence, his world was rocked when he experienced a life-changing road traffic accident in June 2019. The conversation you are about to listen to will in turn rock you. In our conversation together, Damien and I talk about the challenges that come with the dramatic and traumatic onset of a life experience we would prefer not to have had, as well as the gifts that come with disability. We talk about those moments when our planned for life trajectory is derailed and replaced with an ambiguous future. And we talk about the things we learn about ourselves as a consequence and how they can be as life enhancing as they are challenging. The key confidence fundamental in our series that Damien talks to is the need to assimilate and make sense of our new identities that can often come from the experience of disability, and that we need to get comfortable as we can with that before we can expect others to. These interviews are brought to you with the thanks to remarkable people choosing to share their learning about inner confidence so that others can learn faster. This tranche of six conversations in our first series are also brought to you thanks to ELSEG, who are working to create a culture of belonging for everyone. And accessibility is a key part of that. Once you have listened, I ask one thing of you. Send the link to five others who you think might be able to pass on the messages to five more again. We are on a mission at Purple Space to cascade a universal definition of inner confidence, a strong expectation of a positive outcome, and to share the practical things that we can do to create and navigate our working worlds while managing disability and all the things that comes with. Enjoy this conversation. Damien, why does this topic of inner confidence matter so much to those people who are listening and watching us today?
Thanks, Kate. Really excellent opening question. I mean, speaking personally, what I've always been super focused on throughout my life is fulfilling potential and flourishing and trying to do what I can to help others fulfill their potential and flourish in whatever I've done. And I think that confidence is a critical ingredient in enabling that flourishing and that fulfillment of potential, because it enables you to bring all of you, your heart, your soul, everything about you, to whatever situation you face. It could be a work environment, it could be a family situation, it could be something in your community. But at the heart of that realization of potential, that confidence is a critical ingredient. And that's why I think it's so important.
I love it. Great opener to what I know is going to be a fantastic discussion. Damien, you know that Purple Space is on a mission to build the inner confidence of our members and to help people with disabilities to build their careers, to be resilient, to go for the promotions that matter to them. And yet, if you look at your CV, you know, civil service, PwC, now at Army Recruiting, chief executive, and anyone would be forgiven to think it was always easy for you. Mm-hmm. But you've experienced profound challenge in your life. So tell us a little bit about your journey up until a moment and then a little bit about that moment. And then we're going to go beyond that. So give us a once upon a time.
Sure. So I don't know if this will be a disappointment or not to any listeners or viewers, but I've never had a career plan. A lot of my friends at university were always very clear, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this. It was all mapped out. I had no idea. But I've always tried to do things that I was passionate about and that interested me. And I've always tried to do those things as well as I can. And what I found is that that has opened up opportunities along the way. But I think there probably are three threads through the career choices that I've made and the things I've done. The first of those is I've always been super interested in doing things that have a strong sense of purpose around them. And I think that's what drew me into my interest into public policy, the public realm, and the sorts of things I've done as a consultant and latterly in running big managed services. Secondly, I've always been fascinated by leadership. I've always looked to seize opportunities to take on leadership roles. I've sought out leaders who I admired and respected, who I could learn from, and it's been a great privilege to learn from some really great leaders and actually also to learn from some leaders who weren't so great through my career, because I think actually you can take things from lots of different people. And then the third piece is to make sure that I was always surrounded by teams of people who are both highly intellectually able and also highly emotionally literate. And I've always sort of sought out roles that afforded those opportunities. And so as you alluded to, I started life in the civil service and spent a few years there. And I had the opportunity to work with a really great man, Sir Andrew Foster, former Deputy Chief Executive of the Health Service and latterly the Chief Executive of the Audit Commission. I was his private secretary for a couple of years, which was fascinating. And it felt like being in an episode of The West Wing every day in private office.
In what way?
You would get the phone call that, you know, number 10, had been in touch and they needed Andrew to come in and talk about X the following day. And I was the guy who wrote the speech, put the slides together, did the thinking for Andrew. And that just felt like a really privileged thing to be doing at the age of 27, 28. So a hugely formative experience. And I learned a huge amount from being around Andrew, but also some of the people I got to meet as a result. And I then thought about what I would do next. And I was really conscious that I, at that point, I had no commercial experience. I'd been a postgraduate at the London School of Economics. I'd gone into the civil service. And I thought, well, you know, I should go and get a couple of years of commercial experience because everybody thinks that's what you should do. So I'll go and do that. And then I'll probably come back into public sector management in some capacity. So I joined PwC, really at the time, very small consulting practice, working with government clients. There was probably only 60 or 70 of us in the organization at the time. So it was a great time to join because it felt like a startup and it had the energy of a startup, but in a really big kind of corporate setting with all the advantages that that brings. And so much for spending 2 years and coming back, because actually I ended up spending almost 14 years with the practice. And as I say, when I arrived, 60 to 70 people. When I left, 2,500 people. Mm. And I was a senior director in the government practice. And I'd worked with a huge number of really fascinating government departments, the Department for Work and Pensions, Energy and Climate Change, Justice, range of other organizations on some really big and really interesting programs, including around disability. And I had the opportunity to work in the Office for Disability Issues on secondment for 6 months, which I loved. It was one of my most favorite roles when it was just being formed. So I got to do some really interesting work. But as I was got more and more embedded in doing that work, I got more and more interested in leadership and in being the accountable person for delivering the thing. And consultancy is a wonderful way of learning, doing different work. It's very exciting, very fast pace. But ultimately, you are the advisor. And I wanted to move from being the advisor to being the principal, to being the person responsible for, you know, the delivery of the program, the operation, whatever it was. And Capita were and still are one of the biggest providers of big scaled services to the public sector. You know, for good or ill, they've got a significant reputation out there for that. And it was one of those serendipitous things that I was just having this internal dialogue about what to do next. And I got a phone call from Capita saying, do you want to come and have a conversation? So I did that and I joined. And, you know, that's been, you know, the roller coaster of the last 8 years. And 3 or 4 years in, I was doing well. I'd just been promoted. And ironically, as it turned out, I had taken responsibility for Capita's disability assessment service, which is not without controversy.
Yeah.
Although actually, I think most of our people, most of the time, do a really good job in what they do and are passionate about what they do. And I had gone out on a weekend for a ride on my bike. One of the things I do alongside work is I've always been a very keen sportsman, athlete. And at the time, I was doing a lot of triathlon. So I went out for what I thought was going to be a routine training ride on my bike. And 20 minutes into the ride, I was involved in a car accident and I nearly died. I was taken to hospital, St. Mary's Hospital, near where I live. And the diagnosis was that I had broken my neck and I'd sustained damage to my spinal cord. You know, the bone can be fixed and I now have an even stronger neck than the neck I had before the injury. But damage to a spinal cord is permanent. You don't literally, in some cases, walk away from it. And I woke up in a hospital bed the following day, paralyzed below the shoulders, and really not being sure what the future was going to hold for me. But I can remember being very, very clear very early on that somehow I was going to get through this. And I was going to bounce back and that I would return home to my family and I would return to full-time work and to being a professional as a, you know, a professional career. And that took several months of really hard work, but I got there. And there is some long-term damage. I have some hand impairments. I walk with crutches now. Spinal cord injury also affects things like bowel and bladder management, and I still have some issues there that I have to manage day to day, although fortunately that's improved a lot. But I've adjusted and I've adapted and I've re-engaged and embraced my career and continue to progress.
Damien, I've heard you share your story several times and in different guises. Mm-hmm. What I'm really interested in is that automatic reaction you had, mm-hmm. that you were gonna continue in your career, that your career mattered to you, mm-hmm. and that you were gonna get back into that career driving seat. Mm-hmm. You know, we're interviewing some incredible people, people who have lived experience from the get-go, from birth, those people who may acquire a disability through the course of their working life, like myself, arthritis, where the body just takes against itself, but equally people like you who experience injury through quite dramatic circumstances. Mm-hmm. So going back to that, Dame, you know, what did you draw on? Mm-hmm. What was it about your previous career and or your default personality, mm-hmm. and or the loved ones around you? What did you draw on, mm-hmm. to keep going and to have that automatic instinct to keep, yeah. going?
Well, I think I'm very conscious that I was able to draw on a number of sources of privilege in how I was able to respond. So I was economically relatively secure, and I had a very supportive employer in Capita who were brilliant at looking after me and making sure that even when I was out of work that I was taken care of and my family was taken care of. I had a huge well of community support. So we have a wonderful local community where we live in North London, and they really rallied around me and my family through what was a very difficult period for us. I have an incredibly supportive family. most importantly, two amazing children, Julia and Lucas, and my wife, Eileen, who, as a breast cancer survivor, is a real fighter herself, and was brilliant in the support that she gave to me. So I'm very conscious that I brought a number of privileges to the position that undoubtedly helped me to get to the place that I needed to be to continue. I would also say that I'm somebody that's always been able to self-reflect. So I've had previous occasional battles with depression, mental health issues, but I've always been able to self-reflect, to think about what I needed to do differently and how to frame things differently and find a way to look at things through a more positive prism. And I think that that was undoubtedly tested to the extreme in the days and weeks after my injury. But I think it stood me in really good stead.
Mm. Take me through some of the years that followed, mm-hmm. and particularly at work. So you go back to work somewhat changed. Mm-hmm. Your colleagues who have worked with you previously, you know, may react mm-hmm. differently or awkwardly or not. You know, mm-hmm. People are very different. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look back, what were the learns that you gained about others and how they react to disability and the things that you can do to mm-hmm. make it easier for them to make the adjustments that you might need?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, I think the first observation I would make is I think that the series that Purple Space has done on confident conversations has got some real learning in this, and certainly there were things I took from it. And I think one of them in particular has always resonated with me, which is the importance of sort of assimilating how you've changed into your identity and getting to a place where you are, you know, you have some acceptance of that. I mean, I went from this usually capable athlete to somebody that was needing help to feed, clothe, wash, everything else in the early days of my injury. So it's a profound change. And I think you can't rush that. You need time to assimilate it. But I think unless you've assimilated the sense of what does this mean for me and my identity, it's actually quite difficult to get other people into a place where you can expect them to assimilate it. So that would be, I think, probably my first observation. Secondly, I think there's a really important piece about empathy. What I observe is that a lot of people, clearly, even people with good intentions, struggle to know how to engage with somebody who perhaps they don't know very well, or perhaps they know very well, who has a disability. And they don't sometimes know what to say. They're worried they're going to say the wrong thing. They're not quite sure how to act. And I think that it's very easy as the person with the disability to become frustrated by that, and very understandable. But I think having a degree of empathy for where that person's at and what they're struggling with, and thinking, okay, I shouldn't have to do this, but how can I make it easier for that person to understand me better and communicate really clearly what I need? And sometimes that takes you to some really, really interesting places. So as a 47-year-old man, as I was when I was first injured, when you are having a conversation with your divisional HR director about the arrangements that you need to enable you to self-catheterize five times a day in the office, that's not a conversation you expect to have at that age. But I think that you know, helping people to be comfortable around asking those sorts of questions is also really important.
You touch on something, it comes through in these conversations and the work we do at Purple Space, mm-hmm. is sometimes you have to prime the way mm-hmm. to make it easy for people to help us, if that makes sense. And it's, you know, we may feel irritation and may from time to time howl to the moon that mm-hmm. we wish life was altogether different and it was mm-hmm. easy and people just got it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work that way, does
No.
it?
No.
You know, you're a very positive person. Has it always been that way? Or have you learned by trial and error?
I am absolutely a very positive person. Some people even insist on saying to me that I'm inspirational, which if you've seen my TED talk, you'll know is something that I tend to bridle against. And but I do, I understand it. I still have bad days, like everybody has. And even the most positive people don't stop having bad days. But what you get good at, I think, is recognizing the bad day for what it is, and not extemporizing from what is a bad day and making it feel like it's the biggest thing that you can't get past. So I think I'm probably pretty good at recognizing when I'm having a down day and just containing it and just accepting it's a down day and moving on to the next day. And I think that helps because I think one of the reasons people have been so willing to support me and to sort of rally to my cause is they are, people tend to be drawn to positive energy. And I hope that's something that's helped me in terms of the journey I've been on and how I've been able to work with others around it.
Mm. Wonderful story, wonderful stuff. Damien, thinking about where you are now, so chief executive of British Army Recruiting, part of the Capita Group, that's quite a role and responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, and anyone who reads the newspapers knows it's kind of hard right now in terms of recruiting. You know, you eyeball ministers from time to time for a living. These are roles and responsibilities where you have to dig deep into that well of inner confidence. Mm-hmm. Are there days where you ever doubt yourself and your abilities?
So the job I'm doing right now, on a good day, it's the best job I've ever done because the social purpose around working with young men and women and helping them find a career into the armed forces is amazing and hugely rewarding. And I know that the people that work with me on it are motivated in the same way. On a bad day, this is the hardest job I've ever done, undoubtedly. And those are the days where you really need to dig deep, as you say. And I think that in some ways, this is where, and this is going to sound slightly perverse, the experience of traumatic injury and learning to live with an acquired disability has actually been helpful. Because it's forced me to confront something that is so difficult and has tested me in ways I never thought I would be tested. That actually, even when I'm having the toughest day, I think to myself, you know what? If I've done that, I can do this. So it's finding the gift in what could look like a very, you know, and is a very adverse and very challenging life experience to have gone through.
Again, one of the things that comes through the purpose space community is how we often learn from each other. Mm-hmm. So although, say, for example, our experiences are completely different, you know, 15-year-old running around a hockey pitch and acquiring JCA, juvenile chronic, is altogether different than being a grown-up adult with a career, going places and to experience that accident. Mm-hmm. So seemingly very different, scratch below the surface. We have a lot of resonance. There's a lot of similarities. If you were to offer, you know, one or two golden truths, tips, techniques, those people who are coming behind us, who may not have had some of the privileges in our career, what would you offer? What would be your advice for those people a bit further from the jobs market, looking for their first job or they've had a difficult experience and feeling bruised by that?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing I would say is don't underestimate what you bring with the experience that you've had, which may have been an adverse experience, and the value of that to an employer. Don't downplay it. See it as actually a positive differentiator. Some of the people I know within the sort of broader disability and health community who I've got to know, particularly since my injury, have achieved some of the most extraordinary things. And I think sometimes we sort of are a little shy about promoting that. Mm. And actually, one of the things that I've tried to do since my injury, and you and I have spoken about this before, I think, is think about how you can use what your lived experience has been of adversity as a differentiator, as something that differentiates you from the person next to you. So I think that would be my first observation. And I know sometimes that's tough, but that would be my first. I think my second observation would be don't underestimate the importance of emotional authenticity as something that can help you along in your career.
Tell us what you mean by that.
I mean that the younger me was very preoccupied, you know, came through a classic, you know, university education route where intellectual agility and intellectual capability feels like the most important thing to progress and get on. And early in my career, I was always very focused on how I could demonstrate that. And of course, it's important. Mm. But actually, one of the things that I learned was that emotional authenticity, bringing all of you into a work situation, you know, all of your experience from different parts of your life is incredibly valuable. whether it's problem solving, whether it's dealing with a difficult relationship in a business setting. These are actually the things that can make the real difference. And I think we are not always comfortable or confident to do that. And I think that's something that is worth reflecting on for all of us. And I certainly, it's certainly something I think about a lot.
It's super stuff. Just talking about some of the resources that we're creating at Purple Space. Mm-hmm. So one is a series of writings and publications, which we're calling Confident Conversations. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, we searched high and low for the best definition mm-hmm. of confidence. And we went to Harvard, where their expression of confidence is a strong expectation mm-hmm. of a positive outcome, which mm-hmm. we think is one of the best. And what we've done is create six fundamental building blocks for building inner confidence and six hurdles. Mm-hmm. What would you say the kind of fundamentals that speak to you?
Yeah.
What would be the biggest building blocks in terms of building that inner confidence?
Yeah. Well, for me, I would say it is very much about having the ability to self-reflect and the self-awareness yeah. to assimilate one's identity, maybe the change in one's identity,
yeah,
into how one lives, operates, and engages with the world around you. And that could be in a work environment, it could be in a family environment. So having that sense of surety in your identity, particularly if you've been through, as I have, a traumatic injury that has led to, you know, you really having to re-question and re-establish what your identity is.
And how to me, do you that's do that? Do you do that through reading, through talking to loved ones or talking to others who've sustained injury? How do you reflect on that and learn and then go again?
So I have always put a lot of store in therapy at various points in my life.
Yeah.
And undoubtedly being able to talk to somebody who can bring an empathetic but an objective view to a situation, I think is really important. I've certainly benefited from speaking at length to my wife and to other members of my family about what's happened to me and the sort of making sense of it. And I think peer-to-peer mentoring relationships are incredibly powerful. And I've certainly benefited from being able to connect with people in similar situations to me who have been through the same struggles. Maybe they're a few more years down the road. I've always found that very instructive.
It's great stuff. And the hurdles, what for you has been the biggest hurdle? Is it physical barriers? Has it been other people's stuff? We talk, as you know, at Purple Space often about the soft bigotry of low expectation or pity, one of the most corrosive of human emotions. What for you have been the hard things?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, actually, it's a very practical issue, which is managing fatigue and managing energy. You know, a spinal cord injury has a very strong physiological set of presenting symptoms around it. There are some days when my energy levels are great. I feel like I could do almost anything I used to be able to do prior to my injury. There are other days where actually I feel very tired. Mm. And, as a leader and as somebody who is always in the spotlight, whether it's sort of working with internal teams or externally, managing my energy levels has been a really, really important part of that. And sometimes that's about knowing how to manage your time. So I will deliberately not really pack every day with lots of things because I know that I will just become much less effective if I do that. And I also think that, there's a big ongoing debate about the sort of working from home versus back to the office piece. Actually, I find it works very well to have a balance between those two things. And I'm fortunate that I have an employer and a client who are very supportive of that.
It's lovely to hear. And again, just thinking about the hurdles and the value of networks, mm-hmm. Your leadership to the Capita mm-hmm. network is extraordinary. We, mm-hmm. Know that, people will take great store in watching their own mm-hmm. leaders share their own mm-hmm. stories of difference. For you, what have you gained most from talking to others?
Yeah. So I, when I came back after my injury, I had a really, really brilliant experience of reintegration into work, and my organisation were incredibly supportive of what I needed. My observation was that, unfortunately, not everybody was having that same quality of experience. And my motivation, therefore, primarily for establishing the Capita Ability Network and working with colleagues to build it, has been about a mission that says until everybody has that consistently excellent experience, then we still have work to do. And at the point at which they do, then maybe we have less work to do. And I think, you know, what I've taken from that, what I've learned from it is the value in the sharing of a really rich set of lived experiences and the confidence that creates amongst others within the disability community, within my organisation, and indeed a broader set of allies, peers, and others who want to learn and understand. So I think, you know, storytelling can be a very powerful source of data. And I think learning how to promulgate and harness that has been one of the things that has been most beneficial that we've done since establishing the network.
It's great stuff. You epitomise that, Damien. Again, Positively Purple, you know, a movement that's just taken off. You know, we've lost control of the Positively Purple movement.
Yeah.
And the concept was as much to celebrate the joy and the naughtiness and the sassiness of our stories, because quite often they're stories of negativity and deficit.
Yeah.
Again, what would you encourage others to hear about the joys?
Yeah.
You know, how would you describe the good things that have come from your experience to others?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a really tricky thing. And again, it sounds very counterintuitive, but there's something about finding the gift in the adversity.
Yeah.
And the fact is that I have been able to do things as a result of what's happened to me after my injury that I probably never otherwise would have been able to do. So as you observed earlier, I've been able to do a TED Talk, which is super fun and amazing, and I'm really, really proud of it. I'm running an employee network group that feels really, really valuable. I've got connected to a much broader network of people in the disability community who are an amazing and an inspiring group of people to be around. And these are all hugely positive things. I think in addition to that, I've been able to distill and understand my own sources of resilience because of having had such a profound experience in a way that actually makes me more effective as a leader and in work environments, because my ability to project confidence and a sense that we will get through this to my teams and people around me, even when it's really, really tough. I mean, I think as a leader, sometimes that's the most valuable thing you can do. You may not have the answer, but you can project a very strong and positive belief that we will find the answer working together.
I love it. And you do all of that with the same day job too.
Indeed.
Recruiting, you know, extraordinary young people to a trade which is about protecting the nation. That,
yes.
You know, that's profound. We've got a tradition where we ask the previous guest to ask a question to the next guest. So I've got one for you, if I may. And the question is, do you carry reactions from friends and family about disability with you, both good and bad? So I'm thinking about, you know, your wonderful wife, your children, your wider family, your friendship circle. So do you carry their reactions with you? Good and bad.
I would love to say that I'm so mature and all-knowing that, you know, I just let it wash over me and, you know, but yes, I do.
Yeah.
And on occasion, I can get grumpy. So sometimes my wife will be doing something very much in the spirit and the intent of wanting to help me or out of concern for me, and I will get frustrated because I feel like I'm being sort of condescended to or patronised, and of course I can do that. And it's something I have to work on, and I'm still working on today. So I mean, I think I undoubtedly carry that stuff with me, and it's, you know, it's part of the journey, is learning to accept that stuff.
It's wonderful. And I suppose my last question to you is, what one lesson have you learned from the great leaders that you have worked with and continue to work with that you would pass on to others?
That's a really good question. I think it is that it's okay not to know the answer. That you don't carry that responsibility for the group that you're leading. What you do carry the responsibility for and how you can be very powerful is helping the people around you collectively to get to the answer.
I love it. Have you got any jobs going, Damien?
I'll see what I can do.
Wonderful. Damien, as ever, a real pleasure to talk to you and to hear your story and to see how you continue to build the network at Capita. Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. So, Damien, I wonder if you would write the next question to our next interviewee.
I would be delighted to. And I'll make sure it's suitably tricky.
I love it. Damien, thank you so much for your time.
As always, Kate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Purple Space is on a mission to cascade a universal definition of inner confidence for employees with disabilities. Our organisation members can access a growing suite of learning tools in order to navigate our working worlds while managing disability, deafness, mental health and neurodivergence. Notice the fundamentals. Remember the hurdles. Take individual action. For more information, visit our website www.purplespace.org.